Hello and welcome. This is Couples Counseling for Parents, a show about couple relationships, how they work, why they don't, what you can do to fix what's broken.
Here are our parents.
Our dad, Dr. Stephen Mitchell, and our mom, Erin Mitchell.
Hello, and thanks for joining us today on Couples Counseling for Parents. I'm Dr. Stephen Mitchell.
I'm Erin Mitchell.
And we are excited to be with you today.
Yes.
We have a great case example. We're going to be talking about the pregnant and postpartum body. We got some requests from our community to drill down on this topic a little bit. So that's what we're going to do today. But right before we get into the case example and the chatter amongst ourselves here,
we'd like to remind you,
we wrote a book.
And it would be super helpful and beneficial if you have not already to pre-order our book.
Pre-order it. Make it special. Make it special, because the more pre-orders we have, the more books we can get out there in the universe. The book is called Too Tired to Fight, The 13 Essential Conflicts Parents Must Have to Keep Their Relationship Strong.
It's a great book. We're really proud of it. We know you're going to like it.
Yeah.
And it would truly be tremendously helpful.
Yeah, help us out. It would be awesome. You can find the book at couplescounselingforparents.com, our website. You can also find it on our Instagram.
Or any place you buy books.
Any place you buy.
No.
Amazon.
No.
Target.
Oh, my gosh.
Powell's. Yes. Powell's bookstore in Portland. You can go to their website and get the book there. And the reason that's special to me is because I love that bookstore.
Is that the bookstore that's a block?
Yes. It's so incredible. If you've never been to Portland, you should go. It's a fun place. But
Portland,
you should.
Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Yeah, not Maine. Yep. Although I hear Portland, Maine's great too. I've never been there, but you should go. But definitely go to Portland, Oregon. And there is this amazing bookstore called Powell's Books there. And it's like you could spend
an entire day. Actually a city block, right?
Yeah, isn't that the thing? It feels like it. Yeah, it's huge.
Oh, I thought it really was. Anyway.
Very big. But anyway, our book's there. All right. That's awesome. But onto the show. Erin's giving me the look. She's saying, let's move on. So let's do that. So we have had some requests from our community to focus on this topic. That's another thing. If you have a podcast topic or something like that you think would you'd like to hear more about, you can DM us.
Or email.
Our email is info@couplescounselingforparents.com, and let us know, and we will put you on the list of topics. And if you, we'll also try to email you back and let you know when the show or the topic is being covered. So, but today, postpartum, pregnant and postpartum body is our topic. So, let's get into this case example. Camille and Thiago have a 2-year-old, and Camille is 3 months pregnant. It's not an overstatement to say that Camille's body is going through quite a lot. She's still breastfeeding, and she's experiencing all the wonders and pains of a pregnant body. Physically, Camille is always having to adjust to some discomfort, whether it's her ever-changing body temperature, a kick in the side from the baby, the exhaustion of breastfeeding, the pain of a clogged duct, the constant little hands touching her breast, face, or any body part, the challenge to get out of a chair or to bend down and pick up her 2-year-old. I mean, the list could go on and on. I think you get the picture. And Camille is constantly experiencing something physical, not to mention the emotional, spiritual, and cognitive dialogue she's having on a regular basis about being a mom, having a baby, being a partner, being an employee, being a daughter, being everything. And so she's constantly having all of this happening, and she's trying to carry on with her every day. And Thiago's not experiencing any of these changes. And honestly, Thiago has not been mindful of Camille and what she's experiencing. Thiago is not a clueless partner or distant dad. He's great. And at the same time, Camille feels like he looks at her like she is the same woman that she was before kids, And he seems to have the same expectations of her without an awareness that she has a whole new bodily experience taking place for her. And she's not sure why, but she sees like Thiago like moving through his day with ease in what seems to her blissful ignorance of what she's dealing with, and she feels resentment brewing. Or maybe she sees Thiago, you know, he makes a comment like, "Hey, did you go to the grocery after work and pick up some food for us to grill this weekend?" And that comment alone makes her just want to scream in his face. Or when Thiago makes a comment about his sore back after a bad night's sleep, she has to bury her face in the pillow just so that she doesn't say something sarcastic and unkind to him. Camille wants Thiago to understand her experience, and it seems that Thiago is not interested.
This is good. I posted this post. I actually don't know when I posted it. It's a recent one.
Yeah.
And it came up for me because I was talking to two of our kids about breastfeeding. I don't know if you remember this conversation.
Mind you, our kids are 12, 10, and 6. So just like you were just having an educational conversation with them. I don't remember.
Yeah, you mean I'm no longer breastfeeding?
Yeah. But,
I am not.
Quote unquote, well beyond the pregnant and yes, kind of postpartum phase. Mm-hmm. Right. But like, yes, it's still very, very pertinent even now.
I don't remember what started the conversation. It's not really the point. But as I'm explaining this to, I think it was the 10 and 6-year-old. Doesn't really matter. But I'm like trying to explain what happens. And I mean, as medically as I am aware of, which is not particularly.
You're not a doctor.
I was not speaking of it as though I was. Or like some sort of like lactation consultant. I don't know all of the ins and outs. I was just explaining it from my perspective of what it was like and the things that I do know having done this. And it was a lot. I was explaining like, you know, the body. At one point I was breastfeeding two kids at different ages at once and like how it switches. Like as soon as I had that next baby, it switched to support that baby. And like I was explaining all of these things. And, like,
yeah, your breast milk switched to accommodate that.
Yeah. Age. And these are the things I'm talking to them about. And even as I'm talking about it, like, oh my goodness, it was amazing. And I was also talking too about like right when I had, I don't remember which one I was talking about, like just having given birth and how my body felt and all of the changes in those first week, say, physical changes, not just about breastfeeding, but just like overwhelming changes happening all the time, like every second of the day for a while there and then throughout. But I think it was like astounding to me, and it happened to me. And I'm saying that, and I was just like, I still don't feel like we've talked enough about what all
and not what because, happened.
And I don't mean that critically, like not like Stephen, you don't get it, but like I don't think I have really.
You even get it yourself.
Yes,
like the depth of it.
Yes, and so I was hearing myself explain all of this and feeling really proud of myself, and also really like that's a lot. It's a lot, and then the thing you said about Camille. She's expected to just keep carrying on. I think some...
As if nothing's going on. As if...
Yeah. Well, even if... Yes, though. Yes. And I think that is so much, you know, for people, like the female experience is... And I'm not trying to say it's not a male experience. So...
Well, pregnancy is not.
Well, I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, okay.
I'm talking about like in life, it feels like I think a lot of people who identify as female or people who are born, you know, female feel like you're expected to just experience discomfort and muscle through it. Like people don't want to hear about it, don't whine about it. It's harder for...
That's a social script.
I think that is a very social script. I think it's this patriarchy that's like, keep going. Like no one, there's no time for that. Like, right.
But if, I mean, it's a little bit of a silly example, but the reason I put it in this case example is because it's the kind of thing we hear about all the time. So Thiago says, oh, you know, man, my back is really sore from, I didn't sleep great. And kind of because of the social scripts and, you know, the patriarchy and stuff, there's this idea that that should really be like, we should really pay attention to Tiago's back, which sure, that's fine. But it misses this entirely other experience of like, Camille's like, your back hurt? You like, my back has been hurting for years, basically, because of pregnancy and because of all these things. And if I were to say my back was sore, there wouldn't be as much attention or import or significance given to it.
So I posted this post on our Instagram, and there are comments or were comments and simply all it's saying is like, validate, acknowledge, yeah, be able to name, like, this is a profound experience, and any profound experience means, mm-hmm, there's gift and privilege and benefit. So don't, mm-hmm, hear me saying what I'm not, which is that it's just this horrible, bad, terrible, exhausting thing. And also, it's hard. It, yeah, is hard to be a pregnant person. It's hard. It's a gift. I personally, mm-hmm, mostly loved it, but it was hard. It was a big challenge every, yeah, single day, every minute of the day, and one that I couldn't not have for a minute. I couldn't just set it aside. You just have to keep doing whatever it is you're being, mm-hmm, asked to do.
Right.
But even in saying like, a pregnant and postpartum person needs partner support and validation throughout this timeline, said, why can't people appreciate what a gift it is? Those two things don't have to
be separate.
They're
not mutually exclusive.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it is the fact that if we say, hey, something profound is happening to me, in me, for me, mm-hmm, and I need to feel like you,
my partner,
are like, your world is as, and it won't be as, but that you are profoundly and intensely and intentionally aware to be mindful of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And what that means.
Which doesn't mean minimizing your experience. Stephen validating my experience isn't trying to say you're not allowed to wake up tired. That's not what we're saying.
Right. Right. And I would say, you know, I was just like Tiago. Like I was not aware. I didn't. I think it's the reality, like, that you are going through something that is in addition to, like, life.
Right.
So, yes, we're both going through life, but then all of a sudden you know, with pregnancy, with postpartum, like, things do get imbalanced. The scales are tipped. Being pregnant and going through life is harder than not being pregnant and going through life. And I think it's not even about noticing that it's hard. I think that that's part of it. I think part of what you also wanted me to do is take pictures and note that it was this amazing thing. And I was so excited about it. And you couldn't not think about your pregnancy.
I think that's part of it too. I think because it is something that is, in a sense, happening to a pregnant person, we do just sort of adapt and carry on. So also, right, as the pregnant person, I'm not constantly bringing attention to things because it's just happening. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And something else was happening yesterday and something else will be happening tomorrow. So it's hard even for the pregnant person to stop and notice, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm, and I think that that is part of the work for both partners, is to stop, to pause, like, oh my goodness. I mean, something you said, so you said you were the Tiago. You used to say a ton, like, when I would be like, can you believe that this is, like, I'm actually growing legs right now? And you would always say, you're the toughest person I know. Like, yeah. But that was kind of it. Like, right, it was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this happens to a lot of people.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. I wasn't in awe of it in the same way.
As I was.
Right.
Right.
But I think again, why this is important, because, you know, some of you are like, well, I'm past that stage of life, you know, kind of like we are. But I think the reason it becomes important is because when there is this feeling that there's a miss, when when, like, I think it really does begin to feed into and generate a lot of the energy around things like the mental load conversation, the default parent conversation, but also just it begins to set up, I think, a question between partners of like, do you notice me? Do you notice my experience? Like, am I important to you? But because this is pretty important and I don't feel like you see that. And I think that that begins to kind of chip away sometimes at the foundational strength of some couples.
I completely agree. And I love that you said it, that this is sort of the foundation for mental load conversations, default mm-hmm. parent conversations, because I do think so much of what happens for both parents is unspoken. It is, right. It's like an experience that if you are not making it overt,
right,
intentionally and specifically, it's not. It is a covert thing. I don't have to tell Stephen, today I'm going to grow fingernails right. for this baby. That just happens.
Right.
But if I'm saying that, like, oh, like there's a growth spurt or whatever, I am exhausted in a way I don't even have words right. for it. Like, there should be a new word for mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. kind of exhaustion. Stephen doesn't know that.
Right.
But also, right. my entire life story had primed me to not share that.
Sure.
So much sure. of, I think, every physical experience I'd ever had. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think females, again, however you identify, mm-hmm. but the female body is told to be quiet, and mm-hmm. What's happening is a little bit shameful, even. So, like,
mm-hmm. or you're trying to like get past this stage so that you can go back and get your body back in yeah. a sense too. Like the body that you have while you're pregnant is like something you should like, not talk about, or right. that you want to get beyond those right. kinds of things. You
know? Exactly. Yes. And I think that there's this conditioning of just keep it to yourself. A lot of people have done this. Oh, it must not. I don't know.
So you're mentioning two things. I think there's, and I think that they come from, they both are the same thing. And so I think what is at the there's a level of awareness that the pregnant partner and the non-pregnant partner both have to have, I think. So what you're talking about is that feeling of, oh, you're not like allowed to talk about your body and you shouldn't share and you should just kind of muscle through. I think that we said that, yeah, those are from some of those cultural scripts.
I have one thing to add to that. Yep. Sorry. I know you're...
Go ahead.
Also be grateful.
Oh, yeah. That idea. Be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a person, our first pregnancy did end in miscarriage. So I did want to be like, oh, I don't want to, I'm glad sure. I have morning sickness. Oh, that's a reminder that I am mm-hmm, pregnant. Mm-hmm. And like this, be grateful. You know, there's other people who can't get pregnant. Be grateful.
Yeah. Yeah. And this isn't about harder. Like what I think what you're ultimately saying is, as the partner who's pregnant, what I want is just to be noticed in all the good stuff that I am grateful for and all the hard stuff that is hard. And what I want is for my partner to be interested and curious about my life in such a way that they're curious about pregnancy and my body and how I'm being impacted by it because they care about me. I think fundamentally that's what I hear you saying.
Well, I think
saying.
Kind of, yes, I think a little bit, but I think stories inform that a lot, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. because I think even what you just described is a relational dynamic. Like that's a cycle where I think a lot of all partners, I think what we're looking for is validation and action because right. yes, I want to be noticed and yes, I want you to notice, sure. but I would like for it to inform and inform action and inform sure. and whatever those actions are that are meaningful to that person. And I think that's what can be very story oriented. Same thing, like as a pregnant person, sometimes they want their partner to back up. Give me
right,
some space.
Right, right. Yeah. Don't. Some people, hey, draw near, massage my feet. Other people are like, hey, don't touch me right
don't
now.
Don't touch me. Stop.
Like that's how validation and action like kind of go together is, right. is because you understand. So I think from that
which
side.
Which is very, very, very story dependent on your own history.
And I think what you're saying is that the pregnant the pregnant partner, because of the social context and social scripts out there, doesn't necessarily feel free to just ask for that, like that very, that validation in action.
They might not feel free, but they have had a lifetime's worth of conditioning that says they probably haven't even thought about it.
Sure. And then when it does come out, it comes out sort of in a maybe a, yeah, a so passive
Camille,
mocking.
Camille probably hasn't said a single thing about it. She's just trying to make it through.
Right.
She's carrying on like Camille has always had
or,
to do.
You know, Tiago might say, oh, my back hurts. And she's like, oh, really? Does your back hurt? And then it gets like chippy and sarcastic.
Exactly.
And what gets missed is the really important need and the really important desire that Camille has.
Right. Because all Tiago hears is like, I'm not allowed to have an experience.
Right.
Because his back probably really does hurt.
Right.
At no point did we say that Tiago is a liar in the case study. But because
right.
Camille doesn't feel at all seen, validated, noticed, or any action taken to support, like, hey, everything you've done today is already more than I imagine you wanted to be doing.
Right.
I've got this.
Right.
Like, hey.
Well, and so I think that's like for the pregnant partner, what that level of attunement is attunement to like, what is that desire and need and how does it present itself for you? And how can you communicate that to your partner in a way that is, you know, kind of, we use this, that is clear, but not critical. That is really about connecting. I think that's for the pregnant partner. I think for the non-pregnant
or
partner.
Or postpartum. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Even
6 years later, postpartum person.
Yes.
Because this came back up.
Yeah. 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 Like, yes. We've talked about this and we still talk about like the misses, you know.
Because thematically the misses are the same.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But yeah, they come up in your other dynamic. You
Correct.
Know, oh, now we're talking about default parent. Now we're talking about mental load. Now we're talking about our just relationship as a whole. Like, yes, that mm-hmm. comes up. But then for the non-pregnant partner, the level of attunement is to the reality that you have to work to be mindful.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work to be mindful and to be intentional of your partner because it isn't happening to your physical body. But because it isn't happening doesn't mean that you don't need to pay attention or that you kind of should feel like, hey, you know, like, don't put that on me. Like, that's just too much work or too much responsibility. No, like, you have to be attuned to the reality that the experiences are not the same and that you need to make effort to understand. And I think that's the place of attunement for the non-pregnant partner.
And then asking what the action should be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
kind of collaborating on that. Yeah.
Had so many friends. Like, I really did wish Stephen would squeeze the heels of my feet for hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My feet just hurt.
Yeah.
And I can think of so many of my very close friends who were like, if my partner touches me, mm-hmm, even to be mm-hmm. like trying to like alleviate
to
some of the discomfort,
yeah.
like don't touch me.
Yeah.
So like, it's not like there's a one size fits all prescription here. It's mm-hmm. it's definitely like, mm-hmm. hey, what is this like? Mm-hmm. I realize I don't, nor could I ever know, but I'd like to.
Right.
I'd like to try
and
to understand.
And what would meet that need? Mm-hmm. Like what action would validate?
Yeah. And if they don't know, try. You'll find out very quickly
if the pregnant partner doesn't know, try something.
Yeah, like, well, they didn't know, I don't have to do anything. Like, well, how mm-hmm. could somebody know something they've never experienced before? Similar to you. Like, how would I know what to do? I've never done this before. I've never been a pregnant person. I don't know what it would feel. Or I've never been pregnant with this body, because every single time I was pregnant, it was night and day different.
And I think that there's a dynamic, and I would say, like, I mean, we've had to talk about this. Like, there were a lot of ways that I missed a lot in this regard for you. And I am sorry that was the case. But I do remember with our first pregnancy, the one that ended in a pregnancy loss, I do feel like I was a little bit better. And I'm thinking about, so Erin was very specific about how she liked cheese to be sliced.
I threw up every single thing I even looked at, smelled. I couldn't go to a grocery store because I would get sick immediately. And so I was losing a lot of weight.
Right.
And it was concerning. And so the midwife was like, get her to eat anything. And I was very sick. And so it was like cheese. I can try cheese, but not thick cheese and not cold cheese.
Right, right. So it was very, very particular. Mm-hmm. And I think that these are the kinds of things that can turn into a place of like shaming the pregnant partner. And from the standpoint of I could see that as like, are you kidding me? What an annoying ass. My goodness. You know, every little thing has to be because you're pregnant and you're not feeling it. Like I think that a lot of partners respond that way. I think that they might start out,
I think it's low grade.
Sensitive. But then as time goes on, there begins to be this annoyance and this frustration. And all that communicates to the pregnant partner is that very same cultural, you know, you're a problem, like just push through, like quit being, you know, so sensitive about this, like just deal with it. And I think that is a place where something like this is really important. If the action that validates is that you cut thinly sliced cheese so that your partner can not throw up, first of all, you should be blown away with like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that the human body changes so much so in this event of pregnancy that like there's such supreme sensitivity to something like the thickness of cheese. Like that's wild. Like, sure. I think that there's something about that that's just amazing. There's a way to be like, oh my goodness. And then there's a way to be like, I'm sure that's frustrating for you. I'm sure you don't like to have to like have all these things and feel nauseous all the time and feel sick at this point. You know what? If it's thin cheese that helps you know that I understand and that I'm trying to validate and move towards you and understand your experience, then I'm cutting thin cheese. And I think that it's those little interactions in these really unique and important periods of a couple's relationship that often go poorly and set the tone for the pattern being set and things going poorly later.
Yes, I think that is the how to fix what's broken here, which is that if you are in the place that Thiago and Camille are, which is the way that Camille is, she's so conditioned. She is so not aware of her own difficulty and privilege. But just like the profound nature of what all she is experiencing. Mm-hmm. And so practiced at it that she doesn't know. And the only way she knows it is that she's annoyed with Thiago for talking
saying
about
his back sore.
Yeah, and that he's so tired. That is the cue. Like, we're missing something. Mm-hmm. There's something about my experience I'm not settled in.
Right.
That doesn't feel right. That feels like you are missing, and that like you're taking up space. Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to take up space.
Right.
Like that's not fair. And when that feeling comes up,
her actual physical space is being taken.
Right. You know? Right. Like I think anytime that's the feeling coming up, you can know there is something to know. And I think if
there's something about you as a pregnant partner's experience that is being missed.
Yes. And probably by yourself first and also by your partner. And that's the cue of like, pause.
Yeah.
Of course I care that you're tired. Of course I care that
your back's sore. But you know, I heard like what you said is like, you know, so Thiago, you know, might walk away, like he might say his back's sore, and then Camille says, oh, your back's really sore, and kind of lays into him with some sarcasm, and he's like, oh, fine, okay, I guess I just can't say what's happening for me.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to have an experience.
I think I wonder what you think about this, Aaron. Like, part of me is like, look, if in this particular stage of life, you saying your back is sore feels like an invalidation to your partner, then for this period of time, maybe the action that validates is you don't talk about those things. It doesn't mean you can't have it. It doesn't mean like you shouldn't have your experience and you're not allowed to be you. But I think it's much more about okay, like I could see how me saying my back is sore, like, is frustrating. It doesn't mean my back's not sore, but I don't need to, like, if that action validates you, I don't need to talk about that.
I think when a partner, and I think you agree with this.
Yeah, I probably do. I think I was just trying to even think, like,
I mean, there are definitely times, even when these conversations are happening, that I think that maybe that's true, because it's like, really? But I think that when a partner's feeling felt and understood and known, then every experience is welcomed. I think that you saying that's your right. back is sore is invalidating only when I feel like I'm not allowed to have a sore back, right. or that you miss it.
Right.
Like, you know.
No, yeah, I agree with that. For
I
sure.
remember, but I am thinking with our youngest, I had horrible, painful varicose veins all the way up my left leg, and I had to wear compression tights in the peak of summer. And that was hard. And you tried to be very, very, very validating, but it didn't matter because you also were able to wear shorts. So sure. even when you said that you were hot, there was never a time where I wasn't like,
I hate seeing your legs right now. Yes. You're in shorts.
Yes. Like, my veins can't support me right now. I need, awful. I think to your point, like, there was a like, no one is as hot as me.
Yeah. Yeah. No one. And I don't need to be like, boy, it's really hot. Just like, yep, we all know it is. Yes, okay. But I think that's in how
things are communicated, because of course you're allowed to be hot, but it's like, oh my gosh, I am so hot and you're in compression tights. Like, oh,
it seemed so miserable. I mean, that was bad.
It was hot. But I think those are the ways that you can, even in saying, I am so hot right now.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at you in compression tights. Like,
you
must need ice water or whatever. Like, there's a way to connect over these very different experiences without competing.
Yeah. And I think that, so I think, you know, like, what's kind of, you know, the quote unquote fix for this kind of thing. I think it is that idea of validation in action, to validate and then to also step forward with the action that validates. And I think that is, so, you know, if you're in this, you know, stage of your parenting life, where you're pregnant and, you know, kind of in that postpartum phase, like, and you're the non-pregnant partner, like, start validating, start attuning to the difference, start attuning to, man, like, what would it be like to have a kid breastfeeding 5, 6, a billion times a day? What would it be like to have, you know, a baby, you know, in your womb, you know, like that weight stuck on you, you know, the front of your body? Like, what would this all be like? And ask and be curious, and then move forward with actions that do validate that.
And I think the asking and being curious is very much a part of, and this is where real connection and honestly even change and healing can happen, is understanding what it's like for your partner. Because every partner has a different history with their own body and their own insecurities, and what it's like to walk through life in their body.
Yeah.
And nothing is as impactful as having that changed all the time.
Yeah.
Constantly. And moving towards understanding that and wanting to know, even if they don't know.
And I think, so if you're presently here, do those things. If you're not here, if you're like Aaron and I, we're kind of beyond that point, but there were things that were missed, and you might need to rehave the conversations. If you're having a tough time with conversations about default parent mental load, or you're having a tough time with conversations where your partner is saying, like, you never validate my experience, maybe you should go back and think about this period of your lives as well, and see if some of these patterns, these misses, started there. And there might be some things to rework and some stories to retell and some acknowledgments, some things to be accountable for.
I think if you are a person who has ever been pregnant, there are there's stories probably, to tell. Yeah,
there's stories
and you
to tell,
can't yeah. tell them so much that you have exhausted mm-hmm. Understanding and sharing your experience about
yeah.
it. And it doesn't have to be just because there's conflict around it. It can just be because at each different age of our kids now, I think about that time differently.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it differently. I miss it differently. I don't miss it differently. Mm-hmm. I yeah. all of it. And I think I can't imagine a time when I will ever not want
right to talk about yeah well, to
process
yeah, to
and
process
to like
that.
Oh
yeah.
my like it's been a long time mm-hmm. of going through some things
yeah yeah
and I
yeah.
don't feel like you understood it and mm-hmm. I do like you said there were some misses and the miss it's you get you know it's not something you can come back to
and a lot of people are like oh why stir up all that why go back to that and the reason being like because if you keep missing it, that pain is still going to be present in your relationship.
Correct.
So you can not talk about it, but it's not going away. Rather, if you do address it, then that miss can actually be a place where you can connect with your partner and it can be something that can heal and not stay stuck in your relationship between you and your partner. Today's show was produced by Aaron and Stephen Mitchell. If you're enjoying the podcast, please hit the follow button and leave us a rating. This helps our content become more visible to others who might enjoy it, and it lets us know how we can keep improving the show. And as always, we're grateful for you listening. Thanks so much for being with us here today on Couples Counseling for Parents. And remember, working on a healthy couple relationship is good parenting.